So, if you've been in church the last few weeks, you might remember that through Advent I've been looking at each week at what the readings have to say about peace and about what it means to prepare for celebrating the birth of the Prince of Peace. And the first 3 weeks were fairly straightforward, but this week we have to look a bit more carefully to see what the readings have to say about peace, but it's there. And to see it, to start with, I want to go right back to our Old Testament reading and King David's bright idea to build a house for God. It seems that David had, after many long years of struggle, become established as king and that Israel was no longer fighting with its neighbours, so David had time and headspace to consider other forms of nation building and perhaps also of building his own reputation and standing as king. And one obvious thing lacking was some sort of impressive national temple as a focus for national worship and identity and a statement of prestige. Of course, David didn't put it quite like that. He suggests that he himself shouldn't have a grander house than God. And maybe he even sincerely believed that. But something about the underlying motivations was a bit off because God's response through the prophet Nathan was to say no thanks. And God goes on to remind David of his place in the grand scheme of things, that it's God who provides security, it's God who provides rest, it's God who will build David's house, and through that house establish all of God's promises and good purposes for humanity. And when the temple is built, it will be built on that foundation and not as a gesture of kind of human grandiosity. So here we get the promise that God will build for David a house and a kingdom that will be established forever. On a purely human sort of level, David might have thought that God was promising that the nation would never fall and that he would always have a descendant on the throne. But we know that's not how history played out. God is promising here something much bigger than David can see. He's promising that Christ will come, born of one of David's descendants, and he's promising that through Christ God will reign not just over a physical kingdom, but over a spiritual kingdom that will persist into eternity. And ultimately, through Christ, all of God's promises are fulfilled. On the cross, Christ defeated every enemy, and he brings about the peace, the rest, and the prosperity that's being glimpsed from afar in the reading from Samuel. It's interesting to me that of all the benefits that come to us from what Christ accomplished, we don't talk about God's rest much. But it's an important thread running through the scriptures from the earliest mention of Sabbath, even before the fall in Genesis, right through to the letter to the Hebrews, where it's a major theme, and where the author describes what it means to be part of God's household in terms of entering God's rest. So we see the rest that God promised to David is multifaceted. It's historical, yes, and there was at least a period of peace and prosperity for Israel. But it also refers to our salvation and the experience we have now, the fullness of human flourishing and the participation in God's life that I've talked about in previous weeks in Advent as ways that the New Testament unpacks peace. And beyond all of that, it refers to the ultimate future, to the time when all evil is ended, all that is broken is mended, and humanity lives with God as we were created to. The rest God promises here is not just a temporary lull in ongoing conflict or a brief pause between crises. It's being secure and at home. It is freedom from threat and conflict, and it is the ending of sorrow and the kind of hard labour that comes from the fall. It's not that all work is bad. There's work that is a good part of being human, purposeful and fruitful and joyful work. But we know that after the fall, humanity experiences the curse of toil amid thorns and thistles, as Genesis puts it. And it's that kind of burdensome toil that we'll leave behind in God's promised rest. Ultimately, rest in this sense is about the presence of God with all that that entails. It's a very rich, deep sense of rest that goes beyond trivially not being busy to a vision of human wholeness and integrity. And this is part of what we'll come to celebrate over the weekend, Sunday night and Monday morning, as we mark Christ's birth. the birth of the one who brings our peace and our rest. It does raise the question, what does it mean to live in the light of that rest now? Let me go back briefly to the idea of Sabbath. Not that Christians have to keep Sabbath in a strict legalistic sort of way that some of you might have grown up with. Or even, you know, I remember when I was a student the first time round and I was living out of home and working in Priceline. And some people at church kind of told me off for working on Sundays. And I pointed out to them that Sunday was double time in penalty rates, and if the church was willing to help pay my rent, I'd be happy to forego the shift. They stopped complaining about it after that. So we don't want to be legalistic in that kind of way about Sabbath. But maybe we can see in the idea of Sabbath a reminder of what God offers us in our lives today. And maybe we can find rhythms of rest which will allow us to step into that invitation more fully in ways that work with the particular constraints of our own lives. The other thing that the author of Hebrews particularly highlights as key to experiencing God's rest is obedience. Obedience, that it is as we live our lives the way God would have us live them that we experience the rest and the peace that God wants us to have. Or to put that another way, that it's our own disobedience which undermines our peace. And David certainly learnt that the hard way in his own life. That can be a challenging thing to hear, but perhaps it won't hurt us to be challenged to ask ourselves, are we being as obedient to God as we should be? Individually in our own lives and as a parish. What does obedience for us as a parish even look like? And how might we live that out through the coming Christmas season and beyond as we seek to be and to build a community of peace?